for the state of the NSA. Can we not get the report back a week before, if, particularly if the bill has been around for some time?
I read through both of them last night myself. All right, we'll try and do that. Hopefully that'll be the last interruption, Mr. Novoskakny.
Thank you, Chair. I also need to apologize for the fact that I only sent my reading note yesterday afternoon, but I was only informed on Friday of the meeting of the day, and yesterday morning I confirmed it. So I did speak to Nani on Friday, and he telephonically said to me the meeting is taking place today.
Yes.
But he only received the letter yesterday morning after I had been from that day too, of course, also dated 21st of March. But anyway, so I just need to apologize for the fact that my document has been distributed so late.
So take advantage of that. On other occasions they've really been very irate. But all right.
The non-acceptance of my exclamation is a chip.
Which is Mr. Lovelyfriend?
Constitution itself.
because Section 184 of the Constitution deals with the Human Rights Commission. Okay, then, firstly, Chairperson, firstly, the existing wrong title and preamble are substituted to bring them in line with the relevant provisions of the Constitution. Clause 1 contains definitions of expressions used in the bill and is similar to the existing Section 1. However, certain definitions have been inserted which are deemed necessary in view of the new amendments to the Act. For example, the definition of Chief Executive Officer, Deputy Chairperson, and member of staff, all those are new definitions that have been inserted. Then, what should be noted, Chairperson, is that although the preamble to the Constitution refers to fundamental human rights, Section 184(1) of the Constitution deals only refers to human rights and not fundamental human rights. It therefore appears appropriate to substitute the existing definition of fundamental rights with a definition of human rights. Furthermore, the words relevant international and regional human rights instruments have been added, which broadens the ambit of the existing definition. Clause 2 provides for the objects of the Commission as provided for in Section 184(1) of the Constitution. There is a view that it's not necessary to repeat provisions of the Constitution in national legislation, but it is suggested that the repetition of the objects of the Human Rights Commission as contained in the Constitution, the repetition thereof, and the inclusion thereof in the bill, it appears to be necessary or appropriate. Clause 3 of the bill provides for the seat of the Commission and is similar to the existing Section 2, which provides that the seat of the Commission shall be determined by the President. Clause 4 of the bill deals with the independence and impartiality and is apart from certain amendments similar to the existing Section 4 of the Act. Provisions are even now made where it's clearly stated that the Commission is independent. Provision is further made that a member of the Commission or member of staff of the Commission may not use the position or privileges of a member of the Commission or member of staff of the Commission for private gain or to benefit another person improperly. Such a member of staff may also not act in a manner that compromises the credibility, impartiality, independence or integrity of the Commission. And provision is further made that any member or member of staff which contravenes one of those two requirements or fails to comply therewith shall be guilty or is guilty of misconduct. So, we broaden the existing clause of the Act dealing with independence and impartiality by adding these other let's call it measures or requirements or offences, whatever you want to call it. The repealed Section 115 of the Interim Constitution provided for the establishment, constitution and the appointment of members of the Commission. Section 193 of the present Constitution provides for requirements for appointment as members of the Commission as well as members of any other Commission, as well as for the procedure to be followed in appointing such members. While Section 194 of the Constitution regulates suspension and removal from office of such members. I think the committee is acquainted with those provisions because the committee deals with the appointment and suspension. clause 5 of the bill now provides for the composition of the commission and is to some extent similar to the existing section 3 of the act that provides for the term of office of the members of the commission. Provision is now made that for the composition of the commission will consist of 11 members. Clause 5 further regulates the qualifications, appointment, suspension and removal from office of members of the commission, and also provides that the term of office of the full-time members may not expire simultaneously. That is also a new principle, I don't want to call principle, but something new that we have inserted in the Act. Clause 5 also regulates the resignation from office of by members of the Commission by providing that such member will be regarded as having resigned if that member, for example, accepts nomination for the National Assembly, the NCLP or the Provincial Legislature. So he can't be a member of the Commission as well as a member of Parliament. I'm not going to go through all the other but there's only one more.
More than well, but maybe on that, it's more than can't be a member of Parliament and a member of the Commission. The moment you accept nomination, so the moment you get yourself onto a party list, you've got to resign from the Commission. A member is regarded as having resigned if that member accepts nomination. Okay,
right. No, I'm just pointing out it's not that membership is accepting nomination.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Then clause 6 represents also a new clause. We now provide for the mandatory designation of two of the full-time members of the commission as chairperson and deputy chairperson. Clause 7 regulates the powers and functions of the chairperson, deputy chairperson and other members of the commission. Provision is further made that the chairperson is for purposes of exercising and performing his or her powers and functions accountable to the commission. The deputy chairperson and other members of the commission are for purposes of performing their powers and functions accountable to the chairperson, and the chairperson is for the purposes of the Public Finance Management Act the executive authority of the commission. Clause 8 deals with vacancies in the commission and is apart from certain minor amendments similar to the existing section 11 of the act. Provision is, among others, in terms of the existing section 11, a vacancy occurs, for example, when a member of the commission dies or when he or she is removed from office. A further scenario is now created that the vacancy will occur in the commission when a member's resignation takes effect. And provision is also made that a vacancy in the commission must be filled within a period, maximum period of 6 months. Of each as a person. So that is where the that might will definitely have an effect on the committee. So it must be the reason is that we do not want vacancies to be not filled for a long period. Clause 9 regulates the determination of the remuneration allowances and other terms and conditions of office and service benefits of members of the Commission. And this apart from certain consequential amendments similar to the existing section. Provision is further made that the allowances and other terms and conditions of office and service benefits may not be adversely altered during the continuation in office. And obviously, you can't reduce their salary. Clause 10 regulates matters relating to meetings of the Commission and is apart from certain consequential amendments similar to the existing Section 12 of the Act. Clause 11 regulates matters relating to committees of the Commission and is with a few minor amendments similar to the existing Section 5 of the Act. Provision is also made that the provisions of Clause 11 regulating matters relating to the meetings of the Commission, for example, the quorum will now also be applicable to meetings of committees of the Commission. for the conferment of powers and assignment of functions. This clause provides that the Commission may, subject to such conditions and directions as it may impose, confer the exercise of any of its powers or assign the performance of any of its functions to a member of the Commission, a member of staff of the Commission, or a committee of the Commission, and then further regulates other matters incidental to such conferment and assignment. Clause 13, well, in terms of the existing Section 6 of the Act, the Commission may at any time approach either the President or Parliament with regard to any matter relating to the exercising of its powers or the performance of its functions. Clause 13 is similar to the existing Section 6, except for the fact that the word Parliament has been substituted with National Assembly, because the Commission is accountable to the National Assembly. And the words other relevant body have also been added. So you can then submit a report to the National Assembly or any other relevant body. The repealed section 116 of the English Constitution provided for certain powers and functions of the Commission. The existing section 7 of the Act also provides for powers and functions of the Commission in addition to what was set out in section 116 of the English Constitution. Clause 14 now provides for powers and functions of the Commission and is apart from certain amendments similar to the existing section 7. It also provides for the inclusion of the powers that were set out in the repealed section 116 of the Interim Constitution. And it also seeks to align the powers and functions of the Commission with some of those of the Commission for Gender Equality. Provision is, among others, made that the Commission may recommend to Parliament or any other legislature the adoption of new legislation which will promote respect for human rights and the culture of human rights. Another function that is given to the Commission is to develop, conduct and manage education programs to foster public understanding of Chapter 2 of the Bill of Rights, the Human Rights Commission Act, and the role and activities of the Commission. And another function that, or power that has been given to the Commission, is to review government policies relating to human rights. Provision is further made that all organs of state must consult with the Commission on all major policy matters affecting the promotion, protection and enforcement of human rights. Needs to be mentioned that it pointed out that Section 184 of the Constitution also confers certain powers on and assigns certain functions to the Commission. What also needs to be pointed out is that the words regional treaties and monitor the implementation have also been added. The insertion of those words broadens the scope of the duty assigned to the Commission. Clause 15 provides for mediation, conciliation and negotiation by the Commission and is similar to the existing Section 8, apart from a few consequential amendments. Clause 16 regulates the procedure applicable to investigations to be conducted by the Commission and is again, apart from certain amendments, similar to the existing Section 9. Provision is made that the Commission or a member of the Commission may direct that any person or category of persons or all persons, the presence of whom is not desirable, may not be present at the proceedings during an investigation or any part thereof, if it is in the interest of justice or if harm to any person might otherwise ensue. And the reason is further made that no person may disclose to any other person the contents of any document in the possession of a member of the Commission or member of staff of the Commission or the record of evidence given before the Commission during any investigation unless the Commission determines otherwise. We're almost there. Clause 17 regulates the powers of members of the Commission, members of staff of the Commission, or authorized authorized police officers regarding the entering and search of premises and the attachment and removal of articles by virtue of a search warrant or an entry and search warrant issued by a magistrate or judge of the High Court and is, again, apart from some consequential and mainly technical amendments similar to the existing Section 10 of the Act. I'm not going to go in for all those until the decision. Clause 18 provides for the payment of compensation for certain expenses incurred by persons in the course of or in connection with investigations by the Commission and is, again, apart from certain amendments similar to the existing Section 14 of the Act. Provision is further made that the Commission may, only after consultation with the Cabinet member responsible for the administration of justice and in consultation with the Minister of Finance, order that such expenses be paid. And then the reference to state funds has been substituted with the reference to the National Revenue Fund, because that is the expression used in the Constitution. In terms of the repeal section 118 of the interim constitution, the Commission had to report to the President annually on its activities, and the President had to table those reports in the National Assembly and what it was then called the Senate. The existing section 15 of the Act provides for additional reports to be submitted to the President and Parliament by the Commission. However, in terms of section 181.5 of the Constitution, the Chapter 9 institutions, which again includes the Commission, are accountable to the National Assembly and must report on the activities and performance of their functions to the National Assembly at least once a year. Clause 19 deals then with reports by the Commission and is again, apart from certain amendments, similar to the existing Section 15 of the Act. Provision is, among others, made for the insertion of the provisions of Section 181.5 of the Constitution in order to confirm the requirement contained in that section that the Commission must, in such a report to the National Assembly, also report on the achievement of its objectives, and that the Commission must, as soon as possible, and no longer on a quarterly basis, as is presently the case, submit to the National Assembly, and no longer to the President and Parliament, as present the case, reports on the findings in respect of functions and investigations of serious nature which were performed or conducted by it. Provision is also made that if the Commission makes any finding or recommendation in respect of a matter investigated by it known to the organization or institution concerned, that organization or institution must, within 30 days after becoming aware of such finding or recommendation, respond in writing to the Commission, indicating the steps that it has taken to give effect to such finding and recommendation. And all these are new provisions. The existing Section 16 of the Act contains provisions pertaining to staff, finances and accountability of the Commission. As a result of Clause 21, to which I will come now, certain amendments had to be effected to the existing Section 16. Provision is now made to further regulate the appointment, term of office, terms and conditions of appointment, and the remuneration allowances and other employment benefits of a Chief Executive Officer of the Commission. And the Commission also made that DOC must enter into a performance agreement with the Commission. Provision is also made to describe the responsibilities, accountability, powers and functions of the CEO, to further regulate the appointment, terms and conditions of appointment, and the remuneration allowances and other terms of other important benefits of the other members of staff. Regarding the remuneration allowances and other important benefits of the staff, such determination by the Commission must be tabled in the National Assembly for approval. we go to clause 21, the repeal section of the 17.2 of the interim constitution provided for the deferral of expenditure incidental to the exercise and performance of the powers and functions of the commission, while the existing section 16 of the act also contains provisions pertaining to the finances and accountability of the commission. Clause 21, which is now a new clause, deals with the accountability, expenses and finances of the commission. It contains the provisions of the repealed section 117.2 of the interim constitution, as well as the provisions dealing with finances and accountability that have been omitted from the existing section 16. It is also made clear that the CEO will be the accounting officer of the commission, and that he or she will be in charge of the responsibilities referred to in the DFMA, Public Finance Management Act. This further makes clear that the budget of the commission constitutes earmarked funds on the departmental vote of the cabinet member responsible for the administration of justice. Clause 22 provides for legal proceedings against the commission and is similar to the existing section 17 of the Act. Clause 23 deals with offences and penalties and is a part of certain consequential amendments similar to the existing section 18 dealing with offences and penalties. A further offence that could be committed in respect of the commission is created, namely, where a person discloses to any other person the contents of any document in possession of a member of the commission, a member of staff of the commission, or the record of evidence given before the commission during an investigation without the commission's permission. Clause 24, the existing section 19 of the Act provides that the President may, after the commission has made the recommendation, make regulations regarding various matters dealing with members of staff, for example, the different categories of salaries, scales of salaries which will be applicable, the requirements for appointment, the hours of attendance and leave of absence. It is, however, argued that the President should not be burdened with the determination by means of regulations of those day-to-day administrative functions, and that the commission, functions of the commission, and that it should rather form part of the functions of the CEO. Clause 24, again, is similar to the existing section 19, except that certain of those matters in respect of which regulations can be made has been deleted. The word President is also substituted with the word Minister, the effect of which is that the President's power to make regulations relating to the members of staff is transferred to the cabinet member responsible for the administration of justice. Provision is further made that any regulation made under clause 24 must, before publication thereof in the Gazette, be submitted to the National Assembly. Clause 25 provides for the repeal of the existing Act, and as a result thereof, certain transitional arrangements need to be made. Clause 26 contains the short title and provides for the commencement of the Act. As far as consultation is concerned, Chairperson, the Commission was consulted on the bill. We have received comments from the Commission. Financial implications, the increase in the number of full-time members of the Commission from the existing 5 to 7 will have financial implications for the Commission. It is, however, not possible to estimate the additional expenditure as it will depend on the packages of the additional two fine members. Chairperson, lastly, the bill was certified and introduced as a Section 75 bill. It was referred to the JTM, but I couldn't see any up to date any indication whether the JTM has made a decision on the classification of the bill. Chairperson, and that's all from my side at this stage. Thank you.
All right.
Smith, followed by Mr. Jeffrey, followed by Mr. Swart, Spilana Machake, in that order, please. Smith.
Thank you. I'm glad we've finally come to this point. We have for so long needed to update the Act. Chair, firstly, under Clause 3, the seat of the Commission must be determined by the President. Surely no longer necessary. I don't think it's necessary to refer at all. It has a de facto seat now. And sub 2 could remain as one. The Commission may establish such offices as it may consider necessary. But my main remarks are on Clause 5. I have others deeper into the bill, but now just because I'm quite sure that we will all be discussing Clause 5, the composition. I want to address 4 separate issues. First, the number of commissioners. 2, the idea of staggering their terms of office. 3, the concept of acting commissioners. And 4, the matter of political affiliation. First, on the matter of appointing 11, I don't myself think that that is necessary. That is the number that was required under the interim constitution. There was the unhappy business when President Mbeki didn't appoint 5 of our 11. But the recommendation of the Chapter 9 review was that there be 7. And I myself don't see that we need more than that. And the question then becomes, should they be full-time or part-time? I tend to think they should be full-time. The fact is that we have some of our best appointments in the current commission are part-time, and it's a pity because I don't think that we have their full-time attention. It can't be expected. But the main thing I wish to address is the idea of staggering terms of office. And I suppose that comes out of the Chapter 9 review, where just to cite to you the relevant considerations, I won't read at very great length, but I think this does help. In its interactions with the committee, the Public Service Commission, for example, said to the Chapter 9 review, they expressed anxiety that the terms of office of the chair and the commissioners would expire at the same time. They, the PSC, proposed an amendment to their legislation to allow for staggering of appointments and expiry of terms of office. The Human Rights Commission, the review pointed out, that was then under Jodie and Leon, would face a similar situation in the future. Committee feels, that's not all of us who wrote this review, that the principle of staggering should apply to all bodies under review, except the Auditor General and the Public Protector. It also cites the fact that the Gender Equality Act, the old one, the existing one, requires that the term of office of full-time commissioners should not expire at the same time. That, in fact, was the reason why that commission sat without any commissioners for a long period, because the president at the time didn't know how he was supposed to effect this staggering business. And I guess there was the usual failure to communicate. Now, so it is a recommendation of the Chapter 9 review that appointments should be staggered. I am not so sure we should do it. The one other body where such a thing exists is in ICASA. But there, the mechanism used to prevent the simultaneous loss of expertise and institutional knowledge and memory is the drawing of lots. And on at least, it's in order to make it as neutral as possible. Out of the ICASA councillors, I forget how many there are, lots would then be drawn to see which 2 would have to expire at a certain point before the end of everybody's term of office. And we had a most unhappy experience where the 2 best councillors were drawn by lot. So the thinking, the idea is not to lose all the expertise all at once and then to have to start from scratch. But I'm not so sure we should do this. If we stagger their terms, and you have said in 2 sub B, the term of office of the full-time members may not expire simultaneously. If we do this thing, then I think we should do it in a specific way. I think what we should do then is to appoint from up initio, we select the commissioners, we should then also say the term of office of these five expires in 7 years, but the term of office of these will expire in whatever, 4 years, in order to make sure that you... But somebody's going to have to work out the arithmetic if we do this thing at all. That's the thinking. But what you can't do is to have anybody other than Parliament, the National Assembly, in fact. The Constitution gives the power to the National Assembly. Anybody other than us, I think, deciding who expires when, and any more neutral... Any more neutral mechanism, in my experience, can have unintended consequences. Then on the matter of acting members, now there's a whole new idea. I don't know where it comes from. I think it's a seriously bad idea. This is not like the bench, where if there's a vacancy, you withdraw from the ranks of the bar or the sidebar. It's not as though there is an existing profession serving the commission. So under sub 5, I don't know why the President, in the consultation with the members, must appoint a person qualified in terms of sub 1 as an acting member for the period of absence or inability of the member concerned or until vacancy is filled. I mean, it's a new idea. I don't agree with that. Just on the matter of political affiliation, I've said this before, but just allow me to say it again. It was the position of the DP, later the DA, through all of the years of negotiation, that people should serve in the independent body if they had any kind of political affiliation. It was because of the transition and because of the positions of the ANC that we've now settled into an approach where people are eligible. The argument was always where the nation's democracy and good people aren't necessarily going to be involved in politics. And therefore, so the position has settled into being one where you can get appointed, but then you resign immediately from the other thing you were doing. Or, as Mr. Jeffries pointed out, the minute you allow yourself to be nominated for anything, you cease to be a member. But you know, it's not desirable. It happened with the very first Human Rights Commission. People were appointed directly from the green leather benches. Dr. Max... And I think there was one other. But nothing could be more undesirable than to appoint direct from Parliament into a body like this. But, you know, it was the nation democracy. It went through by majority. But I would love to see us move away, as we normalize, move away from that sort of approach. So, I mean, for my own part, I wouldn't allow any such thing. But the ANC can tell us, because you have a majority vote, whether you still want. It is, in fairness, the Chapter 9 review also takes the majority approach. I didn't agree with that, but it also takes that approach that we have only so much talent, the history and the recent history and so on and so forth. So those four issues for me under this clause. Just lastly, one other thing. It is my view that we should appoint choose the chairman and vice. You will also find a lot of discussion in the Chapter 9 review. Each Chapter 9 gets their chairman differently. In the case of the Human Rights Commission, they elect their own. That is one of the two possible recommended routes in the Chapter 9 review, because you then, your chairman and deputy then have the confidence of the other commissioners. The alternative is for Parliament. We select the commissioners in the first place, and the alternative is for us then to also designate chair and vice. It's not a good idea to let the President do that. That's the Chapter 9 recommendation.
Thanks. Maybe just to start on clause 5, is the money. I didn't see it in the medium-term budget framework period, but for 11 commissioners, I mean, already the commission is battling. Where did the figure come from? Was it just because it was in the existing legislation? But basically that. Look, I mean, a lot of it we'll debate as we go along. I think that part-time commissioners are useful. Neither the two part-time commissioners were prepared to serve on the commission if they were full-time. I remember, I think they were both approached as to whether they would be prepared to serve full-time. So the part-timeness got their expertise and input. So I think we need to look at that, or we be aware of that. And yeah, then the other ones maybe, look, these are more specific things, but well, there's obviously the whereases. We won the Theatre Active by Parliament, and I think you follow that. But I do use the word whereas.
That where we have Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, now surely we should have Province of Saffdom. We're now the 35th province of China. And Peter Bruce's business guy has called us Saffdom.
Yes, that's Peter Bruce's queer idea. Well, money for Peter Bruce. Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, I was just saying the whereas is. Then on definitions, human rights in chapter 2, that's fine, and relevant international and regional human rights instruments. What is a relevant instrument? It's not an instrument, I mean, surely it should be instruments that we have ratified, but I can just see disputes around what is relevant. So if there is an international treaty but we haven't ratified it, why you know, is it relevant? Then also an organ of state, I don't know why you haven't gone for the constitutional definition in its entirety, because you've included any other statutory body or functionary, whereas the 239 definition, which you start by referring to, that has that link to function rather than statutory bodies or functionaries, but those just came up. Then 4.1a, the commission is independent. I was going to say, what does that mean? But it is in the constitution, all the chapter 9s. So is it necessary? But you know, what does it mean it's independent? It gets its funding from us. It's not entirely independent. The constitution for chapter 9 says that 181.2, these institutions are independent and are subject only to the constitution and the law, and they must be impartial and exercise their powers. Isn't that sufficient? Then I think that's basically it for now. One of the problems with the vacancies is that, and it's probably Parliament's fault or the National Assembly's fault, is that when there's a vacancy, the National Assembly expects the minister to tell it there's a vacancy. And then there's a long delay waiting for the minister to tell it. And I think we need to ensure that when there's a vacancy, the National Assembly can take steps to fill it. Remuneration, you haven't referred to the amendment bill, which is meant to be coming, and presumably would also go through the session, so we may want to look at that. Hopefully it's tabled soon. This one on the remuneration of I won't go through the rest basically, but I think those are the main things. Obviously we'll discuss a lot more, and there'll be probably a public input, but I think, let me just clarify, because I think they're quite fundamental: the definition of human rights, definition of organ of state, and do we need to specify for independence when the constitution already does, and then the 11 people, where did that come from, and more particularly, is the money for it? Because at the moment the commission is threatening not to attend parliamentary meetings because they don't have enough money. And my fear, when the independent commission starts making recommendations on their salary, it's probably going to say they should be getting more money, and that's also going to put a squeeze on the fiscus.
Thank you, Chair. Just to start with, on the costing of the bill, I think that's the issue of memorandum financial implications for the state. It is not possible to estimate the additional expenditure for the commission. We would obviously need to look at that, and that will depend obviously how many numbers we go with in the composition of the commission, but surely one needs to get an idea of what the bill is going to cost. And then I've been largely covered by the two previous speakers who've made very good inputs. Dean, on the composition of the commission, I had questions about the acting member as well. Maybe just to add to that, is it correct that my understanding that an acting member can only serve periods of 6 months? If you look at 5(6), provided that no person may act as an acting member for a period exceeding 6 months, but it doesn't seem a very desirable notion at all. And then I was going to ask about remuneration, and I think JJ pointed out that there was some amendment will come in to bring that whole issue of the Chapter 9 institutions into some umbrella body when it comes to determining remuneration. The vacancies are also underlined that period of 6 months. Now, obviously, one would like to see a vacancies filled as quickly as possible. But should the minister announce at the end of November that there's a vacancy, suddenly it's a problem. I'm just thinking practically, 6 months is a long period. We should be able to do it. But what if you don't do it? Correct. So that's something just to flag that we need to look at. But with those comments, thank you, Chair.
Just Chair, on that, I would rather see an amendment when the people want to do it. I would rather see that we drop the 6 months and we require the National Assembly to put a vacancy or something. But we don't need the minister to tell Parliament that they're going to do it.
I think there's a green.
No, and they, it's just wasting time.
Yeah. Give me a moment, okay?
My comment is going to be around clause 5, and that has got to do with the role of the Office of the Speaker. Because of the independence that has been articulated, it has actually led to a situation where the Chapter 9s are reporting to the Office of the Speaker. But this is not clearly articulated here, and I think it would be good for it to be clearly articulated because it actually to report via the Office of the Speaker.
Well, that's a logistical thing.
Which is important to actually have a provision for, because why I'm mentioning it, when it comes to the vote also, the vote is still with the various departments, like the Department of Justice, and that has got also some. It's something that needs to be looked at, Chair. It has implication in terms of that whether it will still continue to be like that. And then about the number of commissioners, the 11. I am also of the view that the 11 is too much. It's costly. Also in terms of best practice, if you look at other countries, you find that they've been in the same situation of having like too many commissioners, but have decided, I'll make an example of the Canadian Human Rights Commission. They've really dropped down the number of commissioners. No commissioners. It's the chair and the CEO, and the commissioners are just volunteers. And it's out of the reason that within the commissions, you need to have strong operation because you have various divisions that does the job. Because also, what is the problem with the Chapter 9 institution is not clearly articulating what the role of the commissioners is. That's the process that the review process has actually looked into, but it has not been followed through in order for that to be really corrected. For example, with the Commission on Gender Equality, what I know is that there was an attempt to actually look at the job descriptions and also performance contracts, because of the fact that you'd find that commissioners are there, but if you come in and you ask what is the role of the commissioner, it's not really clear, just outside what is just deflated in the Act, but when it comes to day-to-day activities. But then the point that I'm making is that the number of commissioners is just too many. It's costly, and when you look at best practice, other countries have been where we are now thinking that 11 is fine, but they've actually changed based on the fact that they wanted to beef up operations. report, I feel that the provision doesn't actually clearly articulate who says the president or National Assembly, what exactly, what's supposed to be the process, because it might actually lead to a confusing situation. I think it should just be straight, National Assembly, and then we drop off the president. And then this act, in my view, should not override the Public Finance and Management Act. And it shouldn't.
It doesn't.
And there's somewhere where we've actually mentioned the Public Finance and Management Act. But the act itself, there's no section that actually spells it out. And I'll tell you why I'm actually saying so. If you look at the turmoil that sometimes takes place in Chapter 9 institution, it comes out of the impression, to some extent, that this kind of an act would actually have more power than the Public Finance and Management Act. Remember, the Public Finance and Management Act has got an accounting officer who's the CEO who reports to the commissioners. And if you do not actually articulate that in this act, that it does not override it. You have a situation where the commissioners themselves would actually come up with arrangements that conflict the Public Finance and Management Act, and something that I think should actually be clearly stated in this act. In terms of resignation, what has clearly been articulated is that should somebody be on the list or something like that, then they should resign from the list for National Assembly. Any list, yes, for National Assembly or whatever. But what I think, what needs to be clearly outlined here in terms of resignation is the resignation procedure. I'm sure you know there's a history of a case here in Parliament of a commissioner who resigned by giving the chairperson the letter coming to National Assembly. Came a long process. But why I want it to be clearly outlined here is to even assist the commissioners themselves at the point of resignation, so that there's no confusion. Here it just tells of consequences. It doesn't tell of how action should actually take place. And then it says if you actually come to National Assembly and you don't give the 3 months notice, and you know there's got to be a way of getting the commission being compensated on the remuneration and benefits. But the point that I'm making is that you have to actually clearly outline how the commissioner resigns. He's supposed to resign with Parliament, with the National Assembly. And that needs to be clearly stated, because I feel it's not really properly captured. If you feel that the provision is enough,
we'll look at it. We'll look at
it's okay.
No, we'll look at it.
Yeah.
We'll look at it. We
because it's a sore point.
Sure. We acknowledge that, and yeah, I remember that period. It wasn't nice. Ms. Adams?
I just want to know, in the current Act, reporting of the Commission is done to the President and Parliament on a quarterly basis. If you look at Clause 19 now, its reporting is done to the National Assembly, which is one House of Parliament on an annual basis and no longer than to the President and Parliament. So I just want to know what is the reasoning behind it, because I would have thought that the NCOP as another House of Parliament is also not. But can you please tell me what is the reasoning behind that? Thank you.
What do you mean?
So what do you mean when you say she must undertake to receive the quarterly report?
Look, we don't, you know, one of the reasons I imagine that is to Andy is...
All right, sorry.
So what is the floor difference, by the way?
19 of the bill or the... of the act?
Just to say that the interim constitution, the appointment, has been given out by... if you look at 115 in the Indian Constitution, the appointment was by a joint committee of the House and the Parliament.
That was then.
That was then.
Yes.
We're very quick to change that.
Yes.
But I'm just saying where it came from history. So I think the Act, the 94 Act, then referred to Parliament as opposed to, because that was consistent with the Indian Constitution that was governed. When the final Constitution
thank you, Mr. President. I unfortunately forgot to bring my contribution with me. I just wanted to clarify it as to how does the commissioners are appointed by the president. But in my understanding, practically, nominations are invited in this committee,
yes.
Interviews and makes recommendations to the National Assembly, which in turn provides the name to the president. Isn't that something that is meant? But it's not necessary for it to be interviewed. And secondly, on the question of the suspension of a member of the commission.
What clause?
Clause 5.
Right.
10. The president may suspend a member from office, but it doesn't go to say what happens in the course of that suspension, because when a person is suspended, some inquiry is conducted, and then a recommendation is made and a decision is taken. Or is that again covered in the constitution?
194, Mr.
Olamisa,
the Constitution.
So is that enough for anyone who wants
to...
Because my view at the moment would be that it should be made clear in the bill itself.
All right. Okay.
And just as my own comment on the composition, I go along with the idea that there should be full-time 7 members of the commission.
Okay. Here we go. Is that it? Dean?
Thank you so very much. And naturally there are now more things than I wanted originally to say, because people have raised interesting points. On this last thing, the reports by the Commission, let's not forget that what the final constitution added to the duties of the Human Rights Commission, and which is quite unique, is subsection 3. Each year, the Human Rights Commission must require relevant organs of state to provide the Commission with information on measures taken towards the realization of the rights concerning housing, healthcare, food, water, social security, education, and the environment. The reason we did that is that the socioeconomic rights are not full rights. They are rights of so-called access. They are therefore not really justiciable. They are certainly not enforceable. I know what the courts have said about justiciability, but they're not enforceable. That's why we put this in here. So the Human Rights Commission has to require reports on the progressive realization of the socioeconomic rights. Now, the question arises, and, you know, they do those reports, and they complain to us that they don't necessarily get the hearings or the responses that they ought from the relevant committees of National Assembly, because housing goes to housing, water goes to water, and so forth. So I'm only raising the question, is it desirable or not? I don't have a view. In your clause 19, reports by the Commission, to write in anything about the socio-economic rights. Okay, don't answer now. Can I go to the matter of the monies?
They go to those committees, but it's not like they're inaccessible.
Well, I don't know what the exact facts are.
Well, I can log on to Parliament's website and have them in those reports.
Yes, okay.
Why can't the Commission
do? No, that's true, but they probably want something more responsive. Do you know what I mean? Talk to them about it. On clause 21. And since my colleague Kulani Madakira is the BMFA, I want to ask this. Firstly, just on the BMFA, I wonder if she's inter alia thinking about what happened in the past. What happened is that a confusion arose in more than one Chapter 9 between the CEOs, when they were very ambitious people, and the heads of the commissions, because the CEOs took the view that they ran the place, whereas they are only the accounting officers under the PMFA. And the difficulty arose from the fact that there was a lacuna in the PMFA, there is still, which doesn't say that the head of a commission is the executive authority and the CEO is the accounting authority. And therefore, Trevor Manuel at the time issued a regulation for us to clarify the position. Right? And to this day, I mean, people don't know about the regulation. I get it's the start of the summer. I have a copy always available. So that is how that arose. That is how that was resolved. But they, the PMFA applies. The CEO is the accounting officer under the PMFA, and there's a specific chapter in the PMFA for constitutional institutions. So, I mean, it's all governed, and it's firmly in place. What I want to ask is this. Why have you done this treatment of parliamentary voting on the vote for the Chapter 9? Let me remind you, and I'm talking about 21, sub 2, and sub 3. Right? Let me remind you that it was, I think, the most important recommendation of the Chapter 9 was, and with the support of the Treasury, was that the money for the Chapter 9 should not come through the ministries. They shouldn't form part of the ministry's proposed budget. They shouldn't, the national revenue money shouldn't go to the minister. The ministry shouldn't be a conduit for the money to the Chapter 9. Because the minute you have that arrangement, as the Treasury has said and agreed with that, the assumption arises that that independent body is only an agency of the relevant ministry. Therefore, our recommendation was that the budgets of all the Chapter 9 must sit in Parliament's own vote. That is the suggestion. And this is now... That suggestion served before the very last day of the last Parliament. That particular portion was not a resolution, it was just mentioned. But this would be the time to start giving effect to such a thing if we agree with that. What I want to know, Mr. Lovescott, is was it with that in the back of your mind that this was drafted, or is this just a whole new attempt to make sure that the monies don't get mixed up? Because what you have done is to say money must be defrayed.
Clause was
21.2.
Okay.
Expenditure incidental to the exercise of one's powers functions must be defrayed from money appropriated by Parliament for that purpose in the same manner with the necessary changes and subject to the same laws as in the case of expenditure of a Department of State. What does that mean? Money appropriated by Parliament for the purpose contemplated in paragraph A constitutes earmarked funds on a departmental vote of a minister and may not be used for any other purpose. So it's ring fencing within a, is this the appropriate, you're trying to do something similar. You're trying to say, does the elementus a hell this name, give us a hell this name. And you can't they make them, force them to let the institutions draw down the money on the basis of any conditionality. But I mean, I think that's what you're trying to do. But is this a proper way to do it? Is that what you were trying to do? And then it says, the deferral of expenditure in connection with matters provided for in the Constitution, this Act, or any other law, is subject to A, requests being received with the necessary changes in the form as prescribed for the budgetary processes of a Department of State. What do you mean? Are you sort of creating a sort of a shadow department? B, the provisions of the PMFA and the regulations, the instructions issued in terms thereof, as well as the Public Audit Act. So I don't really know what this means, although it sounds like an attempt to ring fence a little bit. I think we can do better. At the bottom of that page, clause 23, may I just ask where the idea comes from that it is now an offence to defame the Human Rights Commission, a member or a member of staff? Far. Where? I mean, you know, we are under the Constitution all under a duty to respect, assist, nurture, and all the rest, and we take that very seriously. But there have been times, you will remember, Chairman, when Dr. Barney Pachona was chairman of the Human Rights Commission, as it then was, and ran the media racism inquiry for President Mbeki, the end of 2001. Well, I mean, if there were any question of defamation of a chairman, I would have sat with one very big problem. Because, I mean, things, some very strange things were done as part of that inquiry. And there were open fights between not only myself, but also Tony Leon and Barney Pachona on the matter of inquiry into racism. So, I mean, you know, there are going to be times, notwithstanding the fact that we have to respect, love, nurture, assist, when it will be a matter of free speech and public debate.
Yes,
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Right, so I mean, this is most unusual. But as with anything most unusual, one would like to know where it came from. And then just lastly, I want to leave a thought in your mind. There's another very strange financial. 18. Subject to the provisions, the Commission may, after consultation with the Minister and in consultation with the Minister of Finance, order that the expenses or a portion of expenses incurred by any person in the course of an investigation by the Commission be paid from the National Revenue Fund in accordance with the PMFA. Now, is it just me? Have I not come across this before? But, and in subsection 3, if a person has suffered damage in the course of the execution of a warrant or an entry and search contemplated in 17.6, and damage was caused, the Commission may order that such damage be made good from the National Revenue Fund. Again, is it just me, or is it very innovative and unusual? And I have a question, but I think they're questions for the Human Rights Commission, whether, you remember it was the first law in 1994, this one, I was not on the committee, Tony Leon went and did it, but it was Johnny in the chair.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you were there.
Uh-huh.
But the most of your time, am I right, went into writing search and seizure. That stuff, because it was the first time such provisions were crossed in a constitutional mould. But I want to ask you now, and maybe the commissioners want to ask, whether they've ever really used this stuff. I don't think so. Because, now first, under Clause 16, competence and compellability. Now, I can actually remember negotiating that at Kempton Park for the interim. So, I mean, that comes from even earlier. But does the Human Rights Commission really need powers to compel people to answer self-incriminating stuff, with the exception of perjury and the use of. Do they really need that? There's a new clause here, a new idea, that a person is only competent and compelled to answer if the Commission first consults the NDPP, or the Director of Public Prosecutions, who has jurisdiction.
Where's that?
16.2(b) (1). They must first, somebody is
no,
being.
No, where's the NDPP?
The DPP.
Oh, there we are.
At the very bottom of the page. You
okay.
must first go and get agreement from your provincial Provincial General before you.
No, it's after consultation.
All right, after consultation. But you're still being told to go and see that. Surely that wasn't there. No? So somebody is being is as worried as I am about the powers of compelling witnesses and said, look, maybe we just make them go and ask their local DPP.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know why all of this has happened and do we still need these? And the other one is, in fact, the whole search and seizure. Has it ever been used, I wonder? And if not, should it still be there or does it do that harm? It has been the inspiration for any number of other such search and seizure sections in any number of other new acts after 1994. So you weren't wasting your time. But I just wonder whether they need these. Thank you.
Spilani Majake and then Mr. Jeffrey.
Thank you, Chief. I wanted to just comment about Clause 21 in terms of departmental vote, and to just agree to the idea that it should be a parliamentary vote, and it's connected to the logistical arrangement also, the reason for the logistical arrangement with the Office of the Speaker. And also, I think what is important is to try and align the Act of Chapter 9 institution. So now I'm actually thinking, we're talking about the number of commissioners. That has got implication also in terms of other commissioners. If you look at, for example, also from the perspective of the public protector, there's no commissioner. It's a chapter 9 institution without investigation, without complaint. And I think there's got to be a process that tries to align chapter 9 institutions acts so that there's some kind of I'll say harmony. And then also in terms of the powers and functions, indeed it's important for some of these powers and functions to be clearly articulated to demonstrate the independence of the institution. But also, if you remember, in terms of Marikana, the kind of comments that came from this office in terms of their intervention in the Marikana process, it should be something that we need to articulate in such a way that the act clearly spells it out. Because the feeling was that there's a commission already that has been appointed to investigate Marikana. And the commission, the South African Human Rights Commission itself was investigating. And the idea was that when a matter is before another forum, maybe it's important to allow the process of that forum to be concluded before you can make any intervention, because then you will actually study the findings of that forum. Otherwise, it's going to be duplication, and for the country it becomes costly exercises of various types of institutions of the same country working on the same matter. And I think it's something that needs to be considered so that you can actually make it part of the provisions of the powers and functions of the Commission.
Mm. Yeah, look, we can go on raising points all day, and I don't want to really say anymore. The only thing was that as far as Clause 13, the Commission may approach the President, National Assembly, or any other relevant body. I think we need to look at the relationship between the Commission and the NCRP. We have been saying to them, where it comes to investigations relating to the provinces, go report to the NCRP. So we just need to look at that. So it may not, this has been put in because of the fact that they're account to the National Assembly, but it may be appropriate. I mean, I know it says National Assembly or any or other relevant body, but it may be appropriate to put in National Assembly, National Council, provinces, or relevant or provincial legislature or municipal council. Yeah, so you find a problem.
Yeah.
You want to go to the sort of legislative body to report it rather than the executive body. So I think it may be, we need to just look at that.
Labiskachni, we've given you a basket full.
Yeah, a lot of it was for sort of our own deliberation.
Fine, but
Norway, he had issues to say he had to respond to it.
Yeah. Where there were comments, you can respond to the comments if you wish. And you've made note of all these, so we'll leave it in there. To the department.
Or the comments on the law.
Of course, I don't
know if
you
do. No. You can email it to Mr. Romano. Alright, Mr. Labiska.
Listen, yes, I'm not going to respond to all these because a lot has been said. One of the most important, the first issue is why as the president to determine the seat that is part of the Christian Act.
No, but it was, the deal is done.
As far as the number of commissioners are concerned, Section 115 of the interim constitution provides that there shall be a human rights commission which shall consist of a chairperson and 10 members. So, and this bill is based on that provision. I don't know.
All right, look, that's something we'll have to apply our minds to.
Yeah.
All right, I don't think Mr. Labiskachni, we can expect him to.
Yeah. Maybe it's clarified, those sections of the interim constitution are no longer binding.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Right. Listen, then, as far as the staggering of office is concerned, that's also something that the committee will have to look at. My only concern is that if you appoint, say, 5 members for a period of 7 years and other 4 members for a period of, say, 3 years to sort of create that staggering, can the members be that have been appointed for 3 years, can't they argue about there be discrimination because why my colleague 5 years and I only 2 years? So that's something that during
the
law.
The issue may be that when the vacancy gets filled, not for the remainder of the term, but for a 7-year period. And then the staggering will
occur. A new term.
Yeah, staggering will occur naturally.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to appoint 2 commissioners. Now, so they will be for 7 years.
The issue of acting appointments, I think that is something that the committee will have to look at. That proposal, if my memory serves me well, comes from the commission. It was made by when Mr. Colopin was still the chairperson. But the commission proposed we should make provision for acting appointments. But that was many, many years ago. Then the issue of the resignation, political affiliation, that's something that the committee need to look at. I think there is 1 or 2 other acts that contains a similar provision, and that's why I've included it in here. But I don't know, I assume that the committee is going to invite public comments, and the Human Rights Commission will definitely come and make a presentation, and I think these are the kind of things that they have to respond to.
Yeah.
Right. I have been.
That's why we used to know beforehand what their points were. If something is obviously not so appropriate, it comes back out.
I see. Again, I'm looking at the interim constitution as far as the appointment of the chairperson and deputy chairperson is concerned. It provided, although it has no force anymore, the chairperson and the deputy chairperson of the commission shall as often as it becomes necessary be elected by the members of the commission.
Yeah.
But again, this is something that the commission will have to express their view on. Because the president at the moment appoints the members of the commission, it was deemed appropriate that he then also appoints the chairperson and deputy chairperson.
No,
whether the commission chooses it. Really the parameters are those. It is the case that the president chooses the chair in many, many other instances, but it really is time to start bringing all of the chapter 9s under one conceptual umbrella and not have the wild disparities that we currently have about appointments of chairman and about this, that and the other.
So I think it's quite important what we do here so that it sets some sort of a standard which hopefully will follow. And I think we should Chair, although we've got different views on the full-time and the part-time, if we do continue with full-time and part-time, there should, I think, be provision for the NA to say, to make, give an input on who should be full-time or recommend who should be full-time and who should be part-time. At the moment, we don't. We get told by the commissioners, by the applicants, that they're willing to be full-time and part-time, but that information is actually not formally communicated to the president. So you've always got to actually check, as far as I recall, you've actually always got to check that.
Not even by the NA to the president?
No, it's not in our report as far as I know.
I might be wrong.
But I don't think there's any provision, and there's certainly not in this bill provision for the NA to decide who's full-time and who's part-time.
People need to know when they're putting their names forward whether they're applying for a full-time or part-time position. So it must be upfront stated, wasn't it?
Sure. The point Mr. Jeffrey is making is that we, in turn, ought to inform the President of that fact. So that, I think we do, but, all right, just something we'll check on.
If you look at this bill, it's not, I don't think there's any provision for that to happen, as far as I can see.
Okay. Something we'll have to provide for that, I think. But that's something we'll do. Ms. Pilani Majanko.
Thanks, Chair. I think for the quality of commissioners, maybe to some extent we need to leave it to be a bit flexible. Because why people want to become part-time sometimes, because we know they are committed, and they're committed heavily with something. They don't want to actually leave completely. And for who they are, we want them to become commissioners. So if we come with some kind of parameters, it may actually limit the choice and maybe also reduce the high quality of people of substance who may be in the position to have as commissioners.
Well, we'll have to debate that together. Remember, Olamisa makes the point that as far as he's concerned, there should be 7 full-time commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
Full stop.
Yeah. And then when
it's going to be a debate within the committee.
Okay. When it comes to the appointment of the chairperson, The Commission on Gender Equality Act says the commissioners from among themselves will choose the chairperson. It's somehow a good idea, especially where you've got a large number of commissioners, so that there is consensus as to who they prefer themselves for the sake of peace and harmony, in terms of promoting good business. But for now, also, what we need to think of, on the other hand, is the fact that we want to really drastically have a situation where we're reducing the number of commissioners.
Okay.
So as we talk about it, we need to take that into consideration.
Fair enough. Okay.
Yes, it's obvious, but you know, it needs to be clarified that obviously the chairperson gets chosen either at a particular time or from time to time, because if the members change, as we're saying, staggering, then you know, at some point some of the commission might say, well, I don't really want that person to chair.
Well, if you come in, tomorrow and there's already a chairperson, are you saying that the new commissioner then says, really? Much of what we've raised is for us to debate amongst ourselves, as you can see and hear. But I don't know if there's any still outstanding questions.
The issue of filling a vacancy within 6 months, again, that's something that the commission, the committee will have to look at. I do not really, I couldn't follow Mr. Jeffrey's argument that when a vacancy arises or occurs, that the minister must inform Parliament.
It's not a statutory, but it's a practice.
Yes.
Is
it not in the regulations?
No, I don't think it's in the regulations. But so, this Dr. Meyer's vacancy, the National Assembly has to wait for the minister.
Yeah.
To tell us, the minister writing to the speaker that the vacancy needs to be filled. And as I said, it's not statutory, but we want to ensure that that doesn't need to happen because it's an unnecessary delay.
We should, in other words, the commission should inform the National Assembly. Why not? There's a vacancy, and in a formal letter to the speaker, I suppose, that's informing the National Assembly. Direct from the commission to the speaker.
I know that shows up in the practice that we have to keep waiting. There are many more months.
I really care about the power of the people.
Oh, okay.
No little power.
Oh, I see. So, Mr. Labuschagne, the question that there's two questions. Mr. Swart wanted to know, there's a 6-month provision here. And if we fail in that 6 months to appoint, I don't know whether that's something you are able to answer. The second question, which there's still been no response to, is where's the money coming from? For however many commissioners we decide should form the commission. But if it's going straight to Parliament, then...
You see, that's why my argument that the 6 months is necessary, if it's up to Parliament, then it's not because you could have it in the middle of a commissioner dies just before the election, and then you're going to have more than 6 months.
Yeah,
because
that.
They said they die 2 months before the election. The new parliament, the old parliament is not going to want to fill the vacancy. The new parliament will have things that will be wandering around doing other. the issue is should be filled without delay, but the unnecessary delay has been, and then I think particularly with Chapter 9, like the office or whatever, things should improve as far as Parliament is concerned and its function. So I don't think that's necessary, but I think that's a discussion that's quite important. I don't think it's about stuff you need to necessarily respond to it. I mean, the only thing would be you bring a mandamus against the National Assembly to form a vacancy. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Dr.
That was very prompt.
Dean. All right, Mr. Lumskaku.
Chairperson, then, the issue that the Commission needs to submit a report to the NA and the President, and that there is no need that the Commission has to report to the President, is something that we can look, or we will have to look at. Well, at the moment, because the NA of the Commission is accountable to the NA, we only provided that must report to the National Assembly. I just want to have a quick look at the existing Act.
Well, we're in the existing Act in terms of the interim constitution within both houses. But I think the issue is the Commission accounts to the NA. But when it comes to Clause 13, where it's an option on the Commission that they may approach the President, National Assembly, or any other relevant body with regard to any matter relating to the exercising of its powers, we've got to look at the relationship between the Commission and the NCOP or the provincial legislators or even municipal councils. Maybe they would fit under other relevant bodies, but where, you know, they do an investigation into their socioeconomic report. You know, there's not, I mean, a lot of those powers on the socioeconomic reports on housing are concurrent. They need to then take that to the NCOP to be able to encourage you. That's the point I'm saying. But I think it's something that we need to debate. Well, I understand where it's come from, why the restriction is there, but I'm just saying it may have unintended consequences. We don't want to give the annual report to the NCOP, but where they've got the option, they should be encouraged to go elsewhere as well.
Chairperson, then the whole issue of where does the, or why should the money of the Commission form part of my department's bank account? That is at present the case. And as I know that in the late Professor Osmal's report.
No, that's not your view.
It was proposed that money should come from Parliament, but I don't think that report has already been approved by the National Assembly. So the question arises, to what extent can you rely on a report that has not been approved?
Yeah, I think that's something we must decide and debate this particular point. Mr. Swart?
Yeah, I think we'll get to the Section 18, but I just wanted to, when you deal with Section 18, and that's compensation, to be paid from the National Revenue Fund, that's a very extraordinary clause. Does that not amount to this whole bill then being a money bill? Which I think it does. But I think that's unheard of, totally. Because to me this is a money bill then. I think it's covered, as you've just pointed out, on the accountability and expenditure under Section 21. So for example, if you have compensation, as like the police have compensation for their plans against it, it comes from their budget. It's a natural thing. I'd like to know, if you are aware, why it should come from the National Revenue Fund. So my view is prima facie that this is then a money bill. And that I'm sitting there in my capacity as a member of the finance committee. Okay.
Listen, at the moment, the existing act provides that those kind of expenditure be paid from state funds. So it's not a new principle. Already, if such money is to be paid, in terms of section 14.1 of the existing act, those kind of expenditure must be paid from state funds. And I think that, and that is why the Minister of Finance is brought into the picture.
No, the Commission can't be sued. Is that what we say? Can be sued. Applies to it.
Liability Act applies to it, compensation, and is there Section 21, legal proceedings against the Commission, 22. But that would normally come from that Commission or that department, said it as if it is a department. So surely that would then come from the its own budget. It's got to make provision for litigation.
So if they go and bash down someone's door and they have to replace the door, they must get the money from their funds, from their budget.
It's like any other department,
yeah.
Surely, and it also makes.
They can't refer that person, the door owner, to. To the state revenue fund.
Exactly.
Yeah. They were
otherwise, yeah, who does the person sue? That person sues the commission. Yeah, they
yeah.
say. They don't, and they, but it's the question of where their funding comes from. So I think that 21.3, the deferral of expenditure in connection with matters provided for in the Consciousness Act is subject to requests being made, provisions and regulations in the form as prescribed for the budgetary processes of departments of state. So the process will have to develop, and maybe we can ask the Commission that, how they deal with such issues. They must make provision in their budget for litigation costs against them. Normally what happens is the State Attorney will act on their behalf and then claim the money back at a later stage. So the Department of Justice normally puts the bill.
They're also covering witness fees here, right?
Yeah.
For people that need to travel. They're saying that must come from the revenue fund. Yeah, they'll have to respond to all these questions. So you're not blaming. Now wait a minute, let's just look at this. You're pointing at me, but you're refusing to blame Tony Leo. No, you didn't. You didn't. You're saying, you're pointing at me as if it's his fault. But Tony Leon went there. No, but you're not blaming Tony Leon. You're saying he went there.
And you must have voted.
All right. If you want to change, we'll change it. With good reasons, of course.
There's any specific question which I did not answer.
Yeah.
I think otherwise.
Well, the members themselves can remind us, but they're not doing so, so I must assume that that's it. Yeah. All right. Honourable members? Yes. I don't know, but I know we're going to have very interesting debates. Whether it's a trickle or a deluge. Okay. Mr. Navaskatni, thank you. You'll be walking the walk with us on this bill. Yes. Our apologies for that. Begin with Namaste. Magistrates and Damase, honourable members.
Chairperson, just two typos. It's not the 25th of March, it's 26th, and then there should be a space next to it, and then a colon after
2030. Thank you so much. Very good. Well done. Jeffrey has moved for the adoption with those few grammatical amendments. Agreed? Anyone opposed? None. Brilliant. The master is gone. At least the report is. Miss Miles.
same as males. Magistrate males, my apologies. First, Ms. Adams, and then Ms. Pilana Majake.
Chairperson, paragraph 6 on page
2.
The last word at Uppington Court, there's an apostrophe. It should be removed.
All right. Wow.
Paragraph 9,
right.
The last line, fit to do a work as a magistrate, there's an apostrophe again. That should be removed. And then the last one,
yes.
The last page,
yes.
The bullet on top, Miss Miles, there should be an apostrophe.
The judicial officers, okay. So that apostrophe stays, Mr. Double? You want them double?
The Romano needs to look at his computer.
It must be
keyboard.
Yeah.
Your apostrophe is 0.6.
Yes. Another apostrophe? No.
The word missing. Recommendation that
Ms. The Ethics Committee's recommendation that Ms. Wilde be
from
removed
office.
From office.
And it should be Ethics Committee.
Ethics. Yes. All right. Any more? Sharp-eyed eagles. Ms. Pilana Majake?
My worry is that here we're looking at possible suspension, approval of suspension of MSMI. But number one says the Ethics Committee, which is a subcommittee of magistrates, ordered that there be an investigation into removal from office on account of continued ill health.
And the upshot of the suspension is the removal.
Why don't you label it correctly? Suspension is pending something. This is something. And then when you look at the end of the report, number 10, it says on February. Okay, maybe the let's look at the opinion first. On page 2, number 9, it says, therefore, the Commission's opinion that she was incapable of carrying out her duties in an efficient manner due to continued ill health was justified. And then the next bullet talks about continuous absenteeism. Number 10 says on the 22nd of February, having considered the legal opinion, the committee resolved to recommend to the House that it confirms that MS might not be restored to office on the grounds of continued ill health. This is removal, not suspension.
Because the Ethics Committee was ordered to investigate with a view to removing her from office. So I don't think that necessarily contradicts the top part. But the last paragraph is a bit more difficult. But it's terminology in the Act is confusing, because you've got to suspend and then the Minister has confirmed it.
That's right.
there is a contradiction between 10, and I don't like the 27th of February being there. Did we formally take a decision on the 27th of February? Aren't we taking that decision now?
Or I take the 27th February 2013 out.
So then you see that the 10 and the recommendation go together and they don't. 10 is it confirms that Mr. Miles not be restored to office. And the recommendation is we recommend the assembly confirm the suspension.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? I know the terminology is extremely difficult to understand. Maybe the likes of the shape of them to understand it. But I would say we should look at the minister's letter where he would be asking us to do a specific thing, and we're agreeing we should do that thing with you. And can that be reflected in the resolution? But the minister was saying, please
do the following.
He should not be restored to office on the grounds of no health, or that's what we would do. If it says, please confirm.
All right.
If it's both, then
we'll
put that in.
But
can we just check on that?
It's the, what do they call it? Dashboard. A dashboard thing. And the key issues we must watch for. Just email them to Mr. Romano now. Forward them immediately. No. Yes. Which matter?
Currently the case that the mask will get hard copy delivery of milk wrappers later. But that is no excuse. And when you're doing milk wrappers at all, you took the trouble one day to say, the legal practice rules of the tomorrow are in your view. So actually she's doing my building instead of straight down to my farm at the end of the long day. Of course nothing in the house. Then the next day, we sat down, you brought me your own copy of my travelling condition that I never laid eyes on as we sat in the hearing. And
then tell us who's your cousin. Well, is he your cousin or isn't he? No.
The next day, the third day, the paperwork arrived.
Yeah, you must, because it's a lot of complaints.
Yeah, actually, I think the problem is with the service officer responded by what we normally do after having made the complaint, we take them to the legal woman there, the grant law, for them to quote to the notability law. So I think maybe some of them they are taking their time.
Well, no, I don't think there's a single service officer. There's a lady on our floor. So just
Honourable Members, just your brief attention, please. Server rat. That wasn't for PMG, by the way. Tomorrow's meeting will be in committee room 90 Plain Street. 90 Plain. Which is, it's in the Marks building, close to your offices. Yes, that's it. No. Committee room 2. Tax building, yes. That's more accurate.
And I see that this afternoon's meeting is also moved.
Where to?
515.
M515, the ad hoc. Okay, alright, I didn't know that. Okay, ad hoc committee at 2 o'clock, honourable members, those of you who are members of that committee. Thank you, we're adjourned.